Welcome back. Mike Oren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green at SaberLife.com. And if you missed last week's episode, it's up on my website, SaberLife.com. It was the first weekend last weekend that I haven't been on the radio in 26 years. 19 years on WYSL 1040, but that ended a little over a week ago when they refused to change what they were posting on Facebook. And I decided I didn't want to be associated with that anymore. And so ended our relationship quickly after 19 years. And I feel fortunate I was able to do it that quickly, given the types of things that they have been posting and the political climate is just going to get more challenging as we get closer to the election. And I can't say enough that voting is so important at all levels. And we found this over the last decade, before that too, but the last decade, some really clear examples where local communities, not big cities, not state legislatures, not the Congress, or even the presidency, but small localities, tiny ones, like Barrington. I challenge you to figure out where Barrington is in New York State. You might have driven through it if you were going down the east side of Keuka Lake, but unless you noticed the sign, you probably didn't realize you were in Barrington. All of these small towns around us are crucial, and you never know when they'll become really regionally crucial in decisions they make about things like trash incinerators in Romulus and major landfills in Waterloo and Seneca Falls. All of these small communities are making key decisions which affect our entire region. So with the primary election, you can vote early now in the primaries, and you got to do that in the next couple of days. And if you want absentee ballot for the general election in November, make sure to get that and sign up for that. Encourage people around you to vote. It's crucial. This is so important at all levels. So I mentioned that just because I sent in my absentee ballot yesterday, and I appreciate the fact that here in New York State we can vote by mail, at least for this primary, and that's not the case in many parts of this country. It's a contentious issue whether you can vote by mail, which is kind of ironic given the military votes by mail and has for, or not maybe everyone in the military, but everyone posted overseas and other parts of the country, perhaps. It's commonly done. It's just, it's an issue in this upcoming general election. So I'm grateful to live in New York where we can vote with absentee ballots. You can't call me here. We may have some live audio up in the near future, but you can always email me, michael@saverlife.com, especially with questions about gardening, trying to identify plants, trying to figure out how to take care of them, whether to put them in the ground. All of those things, you can send questions, send photos of your garden, and really send some photos of your garden just because you have some cool spots in your garden. Maybe it's just a really gorgeous peony or iris. Maybe it's a strange weed that you can't identify. But I love to get photos, even if it's just, you know, bragging about how well your garden is doing. I'd love to see some of those examples, and especially individual plants that you are really proud of and maybe just discovered this year, and it's now become one of your new favorite plants in your garden because it's colorful or long blooming, or in this case, right now, it can withstand a drought. Unless you're watering incessantly, this any plants that are doing well right now are perennials or shrubs or trees, and anything you planted this year probably has needed a lot of water because we just have not got it. Last weekend's show, last Saturday, I was pleading with people to water. I was saying there's not rain in the forecast, and all we've had is sun and wind and now some warmer temperatures. Things are even more dire for your lawns. They're going dormant, turning brown. That's really not a big deal, but you might want to give them one good soaking if we don't get thunderstorms that are predicted. And that's the problem. These thunderstorms just evaporate. You know, they were in the forecast for yesterday, for Friday. They were in the forecast for Sunday, but no more. We didn't really get any on Friday. I guess Canandaigua got a little bit of rain. One of the wineries posted a photo of the rain shower further up the lake. They were down in Hector, and you could see the shower coming across the lake. It looked kind of pretty small. I wasn't going to hit them, and maybe that was what had come through Canandaigua and was moving west. So thunderstorms are hit and miss, and they've been pretty much all miss for those of us that live in Rochester. So now maybe thunderstorms on Monday or Tuesday, possibly some general rain on Wednesday. But until then, a bunch of sunshine, 80-degree temperatures, and some nice wind that just wicks the moisture away from things. So if you've lost some plants over the last week or two, it might be because you didn't water them enough. It's unlikely that you overwatered them unless they're in pots and they're just drenched in water and there's water in the dish or the pan below them. It's been pretty hard to overwater things the last couple of weeks. So don't feel bad if you lost some plants. The nurseries, the garden centers still have really lots of plants. You might be able to make a deal on some of them so that they don't have to keep watering them. It's got to be getting tedious for the nurseries and garden centers just to keep these plants alive. When it's this sunny and windy and warm, they're just pretty much watering them all day long. They go through once, probably go through twice for a lot of the plants, maybe three times for annuals that are still in little six packs. It's just tough to get enough water on these things. So, I've been seeing weeds wilting, and that's never a good sign. And I said that last week, and we have, really not gone anywhere in terms of rainfall. So I went into Mayor's Paint and Hardware just yesterday to get another sprinkler to replace one that had broken, and they were down to not very many sprinklers. But they did have some of the ones that rotate, and I love these they go in a circle, and they go, and then, and it's just, there's this cool rhythm to them. They're old-time sprinklers. They're pretty effective. They last forever, a lot longer than the ones that go just back and forth. So if you like that sound, and I really do, it'd be better if I find a recording of it and then use it here on the show. But you can imagine it, probably, you should consider getting one of those. They're not that expensive. They do last a lot longer than the plastic ones. They all work in a circle, which you can adjust how much of that arc of a circle they cover. So you can adjust them just to do 180 degrees or 45 degrees or whatever. So they're pretty good that way. It's just getting used to them, really. So if you, as I did, run into a place like Mayor's Paint and Hardware, and they're running low on, they had lots of hoses, although a lot ton have been sold. They were running low on some of the sprinklers. but not those ones that go in a circle. So again, it's kind of a cool sound. And watering deeply is the key at this point. An hour. If you have sandy soil, it's going to penetrate quicker than clay and heavier soils. So for sandy soil, maybe you just try to soak things for an hour, hour and a half, 90 minutes. If you have heavier soils and clay, it might be a couple of hours. And you use a trowel to figure out how deep the water has penetrated in the soil. You got to keep in mind, it's got to penetrate the mulch first, and that can absorb a lot of water, and then work its way down to the root zone of your plants. So water deeply, water less often, and if you have containers, maybe put them in with a fairly deep and fairly large pan under them so that you can put a lot of water in there and they can absorb it from the bottom. That's always a better way to water. But I hope it isn't going to be one of those summers where every week I'm just pleading with people to water. We've had a few of those. There was one, I think it was maybe 1991, quite a while ago. And I had a landscape and lawn care business at the time. And it seemed like it was an awfully dry summer and spring and fall. And when I really looked at the weather data after watching things just get, lawns just got torched, we had, I think it was like three or four thunderstorms between April 15th and October 15th. Beyond that, it was just, a tenth of an inch here, 5/100ths of an inch there. And so, and those thunderstorms, especially when the ground is dried out, the water just runs off fast. Kind of imagine you have a pot with potting soil, a hanging basket maybe, and it's dried out, the plants are starting to wilt, and you pour water in, and it just pours right out the bottom of the hanging basket because the soil has shrunk and there's all this space and the water runs through before it can absorb almost anything into that root ball, which is all potting soil. And so the potting soil kind of becomes hydrophobic. It just repels water, basically. Mulch can do kind of the same thing. And so with those thunderstorms, it was like an inch or two of rain, which makes the monthly average look not good, but higher than zero. And yet, effectively, it was pretty useless for our plants. And that was a lot of 90 degree temperatures that summer too. So periodically, we run into these summers where it's just, thunderstorms. And I said last week, I think for people who might work in an office and you're not really connected to what's happening outside, you see, you see these thunderstorms in the forecast, you figure it must rain. You look outside as you're going home and the ground is a little bit wet and you figure, it must have got a nice rain shower. And the plants are happy. I don't have to go home and water. But again, that's why you have a rain gauge, trying to figure out whether you did get any rain while you were at work, perhaps, or how much you got. Often not very much. So water, the plants will appreciate it. And also, if you're going to do any weeding, I've got some weeding to do in my front yard. Soak those areas for maybe a couple of hours and wait a few hours after that. You don't want to go weeding in the mud, but that's going to make the roots much easier to pull out of the ground or dig out of the ground if the ground is somewhat soft, and make a world of difference. If you've got pretty heavy soil, it might even soak it, for one day and then some the next day, and then let it sit for a bit. And by the third day, you're going to have much more fun weeding. Not that weeding's fun, but much easier than if that ground is rock hard and you can't get a trowel in the ground and the roots just break off and you just make no progress whatsoever. So again, soak those areas before you do any weeding. It is kind of fun to put the sprinkler on while you're working under there, but that can get a little bit muddy. A friend of mine posted on Facebook about fireflies. Those are coming soon, and I haven't seen any yet, but any day now, I think we should start seeing fireflies. Maybe you've seen some. If you have seen fireflies or monarch butterflies, send me a note, michael@saverlife.com. But these are some ideas from the Xerces Society on how to help the fireflies in our yards, in our neighborhoods. It says, if you have a yard, consider leaving some corners a little wild. Fireflies thrive in moist habitats. Well, that's not this summer. With abundant native vegetation, dense leaf litter, and true nighttime darkness, these features provide not only the shelter needed by the fireflies, but they also ensure the habitat components needed by fireflies' favorite prey, soft-bodied invertebrates such as snails, slugs, and earthworms. In general, fireflies need just a few basic things: safe places to overwinter, clean sources of water, protection from insecticides, undisturbed ground for burrowing, vegetation of varying heights, and an absence of light pollution. So this adapted, excerpted from the Xerces Society, Firefly Conservation, How You Can Help, and their website online. And there are lots of actually species of fireflies out there. Some of them blink in synchrony. Some fly differently, and there's some cool time-lapse photos of the different species of fireflies and the sort of the dancing lights as they move. And it's a fascinating world. If you want to dig down into fireflies, maybe this summer is a good summer to do that and learn about them. I hope they come eat some of the slugs in my yard, as I haven't been watering much, but I still have plenty of slugs that I find at night. And fireflies are just, they're just cool. I mean, I love them. I love sitting out and watching them. As a kid, I used to collect them in jars and put them in my bedroom and watch them blink and then, you know, let them go. They were just captured my imagination as a kid, and still as an adult. I haven't seen any monarch butterflies, but the milkweed certainly is growing nicely. It is starting to bloom. At least last couple of years, I think I've seen monarch butterflies by this time of the year. So let me know if you've seen some. I haven't heard any reports, seen anyone post about finding monarchs in their yards, but that season is coming. And I heard from a couple of people this past week, one of which is owner of Bay Vista Taqueria, because they have some great Mexican food. I brought them a monarch caterpillar, or a couple of eggs, 2 years ago, I guess, and one last year too. And Dave Jackson, the owner, said that his kids just loved watching that process, and it is an amazing thing to see how a monarch caterpillar grows. When you are kind of introduced to it from the stage of an egg, which is the size of a poppy seed, really, really tiny. And he said his kids love going out on hikes and looking under the milkweed leaves for these little eggs, which are hard to find. They are tiny. There's only one per plant usually that they lay, so it's not easy to find them. If you want some tips, we'll go over that in the next couple of weeks as we start to see the monarchs. There are multiple generations, so the ones that are flying up north at this point that we'll probably see here shortly will lay eggs, and those will turn to caterpillars, fly around, mate, lay eggs, and the ones that are coming up here now, probably third generation, they're laying eggs, and then or second generation, I guess. Then the eggs that they lay are the third generation. Those will mature over the course of July, early August, and lay eggs. And that is the fourth generation, which will mature by early, mid-September and fly to Mexico. That's what they do. Migrate in the fall, mid to late September. They fly about 2,000 miles to Mexico. And that fourth generation lives much longer. They'll live through the winter in Mexico in a specific forest in Mexico. They don't just fly anywhere in Mexico. A very specific, like 50-acre forest that they fly to every year. Even though their great-great-great-grandmother left in February, March, somehow these butterflies know where to go exactly as they are flying south in the fall. And so, again, the fourth generation is the one that lives longer and flies south. The third generation lays those eggs for the fourth, and then dies. They're only alive for weeks, not months, the first, second, and third generations. So it's, I hope you have some milkweed in your yard. If you don't, I've got some milkweed seeds. I've got some milkweed plants. Like I said, I got lots of them growing in my yard. And if you want some wild milkweed, email me, let me know. I'll try to figure out a way to get you some. But I might need you to sign a release that says that you realize you're getting a plant whose name is a weed, milkweed, and that it will spread in your yard, it will be hard to control, and you will end up pulling some of it out just so that you can see your other plants. But I've had it in my yard kind of running amok for the last decade, and I don't really see it as a problem plant. It kind of coexists pretty well with other things. It's not like Japanese knotweed that will shut everything out. And this is much easier to deal with, and I pull some out of my vegetable garden. In fact, some of those ones I pull out, I end up giving to other people. So if you want some milkweed, send me an email, michael@saverlife.com, and I'll find a way to get that to you. I hope you've found some cool plants, maybe some things new to your yard that you've added. Some of our sponsors like Sarah's Garden Center, Palmeter's Garden Nursery, Bristol's Garden Center, Grandpa's Nursery, these Palmeter's down near Avon, between Avon and Geneseo. These are destination nurseries and garden centers, and if you haven't been to them yet this spring and early summer, you should try and get there. Maybe this weekend, maybe this coming week. See what they have, pick up a few plants, see the gardens at Palmeter's and Sarah's Garden Center in particular. You stop by a Broccolo Tree and Lawn Care, their garden center on 441. They've got a bunch of classes that they're doing, and I dropped off a praying mantis egg case a couple weeks ago, and that hopefully will be hatching out soon, and they'll have some little, like 1 to 200 little praying mantis babies to give away. Hard to believe. The egg case is only the size, well, it's much smaller than a ping pong ball, and there's going to be 1 to 200 of these praying mantis climbing out of that, which that's going to be kind of cool to see. So follow Broccolo Nursery and Garden Center on Facebook, and they'll probably post on social media when those emerge. And you want to get them quickly because they start eating each other. They're kind of known for that, the praying mantis. So, but fun to see. They are fascinating creatures. And the babies, from the videos that I've seen, are tiny, really tiny, when they first emerge. So follow Broccolo on Facebook, and you'll hear about when those praying mantis emerge. If you run into some interesting creatures, not just, you know, the more common things like monarchs or fireflies, but other interesting things. I love to see photos, whether it's a butterfly or moth or something else. I saw what I think was a hummingbird moth in our yard at our mock orange earlier this week. It's kind of like a small bumblebee, but it flies like a hummingbird, has antenna, and is often kind of colorful. This one was pretty fast. I didn't get a chance to really look at it, but my impression was, in its quick visit, that it might have been one of these hummingbird moths. And they really love bee balm, Monarda. If you want to attract hummingbirds and hummingbird moths, get some bee balm. It's also known as Oswego tea. It's in the mint family, so it does spread, but not wildly. I haven't run into really anyone who's complained about bee balm spreading, but it does spread somewhat. There are a variety of different colors that you can get, and you can use it to make tea. And the flowers are edible. They're really stunning. Not quite blooming yet, although I've seen some in nurseries already in bloom for sale. In the gardens, I haven't seen it in bloom yet, but it will be soon. And it's, as far as I can tell, the favorite plant for the hummingbird moth. More likely to see that out in the countryside. That's why I'm a little skeptical that that's what I saw, because I've never really seen one in the city. I live in the 19th Ward, and so I'm still a little skeptical that that's what I saw. But I might be. So plant some bee balm. There are some newer varieties that are more clumping, that and some that stay fairly small, some that bloom at 4 or 5 feet or more. There's some that are really, really quite tall. It would love some sun. In the shade, it's not going to bloom as much, and it's going to kind of tip over a little bit and take up a little bit more space with some shade. So it would like more sun, definitely, to really bloom and attract those hummingbirds and hummingbird moths. Again, you can reach me by sending me a note, michael@saferlife.com. You can do that anytime. I just posted on Facebook, or Instagram, actually, under my Saver Life MWT. That's my... you find me on Instagram. Just posted a new game. Is it poison ivy or is it not poison ivy? And the two photos I posted just earlier this week are one's box elder, which looks just like poison ivy, and the other is poison ivy, but they both have three leaves. But the photos I chose so intentionally so you can see that the box elder, which is the one on top, lighter green, although that doesn't mean anything. It just happens to be this photo. Poison ivy can be light green too. But you'll see that the group of three leaves comes off the stem opposite each other. That's because it's in the maple family, the box elder. Poison ivy comes out alternating from the stem, and you can look closely. You can kind of see that it's different than the box elder. So I'm going to post some other lookalikes, and the idea is to try and get people more used to identifying it, because I was riding my bicycle along the Riverway Trail and the Canal Trail, and there is a lot of poison ivy. It's crazy how much poison ivy is out there. So if you're not sure whether you have it in your yard, send me a photo. Also, I'm happy to scout yards for poison ivy. This is something I've done some in the past, but I've got this sixth sense for it, almost to the point where I just like show up, walk down the driveway, and tell you whether you have some poison ivy without even looking anywhere. It's not quite that refined yet, but I'm getting there. So I do have to charge for poison ivy scouting events, depending on the size of the yard. But if you can send me photos, that's free. And happy to look at as many photos as you want to send of things that might be poison ivy in your yard. But if you want me to come out and look, happy to do that. And, you know, it's sort of automatically socially distanced because you don't want to be near the poison ivy. I don't remove it. I can give you suggestions on how to get rid of it, but I don't. It's scouting. It's not removal of poison ivy. Just want to make that clear. And the birds are seeding it all over the place. So email me if you want details, michael@saverlife.com. If you, again, find some cool plants, some, I found a snake crossing the canal path. Take a photo and send it along. Love to see what you discover. I saw a bunch of deer while I was on the canal path. And I think I saw a river otter last week, right near the University of Rochester, kind of under the Elmwood Bridge, swimming toward the Interfaith Chapel. And this thing was flying. It was hard to tell what it was because it was mainly underwater. It was just the head above the surface. Don't think it was a beaver, although I did see evidence of beaver in that area. But this thing was really, it was kind of swimming with the current, across the current, but surprisingly fast, and then went up along the shore, swimming along the shore, and tried to follow it so I could see it get out of the water, but didn't. But river otters are back. You might see mink. There's all kinds of cool things that you might see while you're out exploring nature and hopefully avoiding poison ivy. So again, if you missed last week's episode or didn't realize that we are no longer on WYSL 1040, you can find it here on the website. And also check my Facebook post if you want more details on why I left WYSL 1040, but you can also check their Facebook posts and you'll get a sense pretty quickly for why I left the station. Looking forward to moving ahead, and make sure to tune in 10 a.m. this morning for Love of Food here on the website, and 11 a.m. for Discover the Finger Lakes tomorrow. I'll have the Grapevine here on the website at 9 a.m. Have a great day. Michael Warren Thomas here at SaverLife.com.